morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Carrie Arnold, and this is my husband, James. We both thank you for letting us speak with you about our marriage, relationship, and family. This coming September, like Gary said, will be our 15th anniversary. Live in Houston, Texas, blended family with four children. I brought our oldest daughter, Alicia, she's 20 now, into the marriage. And James brought our son, Gabe, who's now 18, and daughter, Sarah, who is 16. And we had Jake together, and he's 9 now. In these 15 years of marriage, we've had some wonderful moments, but we've also faced many struggles and had some pretty dark times. However, we have learned that our God is a God of restoration and order, and it is our intention to relay why we know this to be true through our story.
So sorry, we are going to read most of this. So anybody who's ever done this, it's quite a process. So helps to just have it and turn to it. So two of the greatest gifts I've ever experienced came into my life about 17 years ago. And the timing had to have been divine providence. First was the gift of my friendship with Carrie. And the other was the introduction to a man who would provide friendship, wisdom, and support by sharing his faith and life with me. Later, I would come to understand that this man was modeling spiritual parenting for me, the way Paul had invested and taught Timothy, and would grow to become a spiritual father. Over the following few years, I began to understand how much more was being provided beyond just one man investing. He had a wife, and they knew other couples and families who were all like-minded with willingness to serve and support Carrie, me, our children, as God had commissioned.
So when we were asked to share with you what God's been doing in our marriage lately, we quickly agreed because we've received encouragement by hearing about God's provision within the marriages of others who've shared with us. 2 Corinthians 1:4 tells us that God comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble. We've had seasons of great difficulty and pain, and there were times when I wasn't sure we should keep trying to stay married when we were so obviously not working. But those thoughts were momentary because of the other couples, many of you in this room, that shared their struggles with us and how God has worked through them and how they persevered and have become closer to God and stronger as a couple. This unique exposure has provided insight, wisdom, and perspective across many families and generations, and I cannot begin to describe how very thankful we are for it. We hope that you will be encouraged by our story of struggles and hope as we are learning to walk with and trust God. Is that still me? Okay. Before we continue with our story, let us each tell you a little bit about our upbringing and how Christ reached us individually. My mother and father separated when I was 2 or 3, and when I was 4, my father disappeared. My mom worked hard to support us, but that left me with little parental guidance, and I tried to decide for myself who I was and what was right and wrong. In my teen years, I was experimenting with drugs and alcohol and got pregnant my senior year of high school. I waddled across the stage of my high school graduation and gave birth to Alicia less than a week later. It wasn't until 2002, when I was 21 and out of nowhere, 3-year-old Alicia began asking me questions about God and heaven and asking to go to church, that I even thought about spiritual things. I had no idea where she had gotten this concept, so I checked with her daycare providers to make sure that no one was talking about God there. I ultimately didn't figure it out, and she kept asking, so I took her to the smallest church filled with the oldest people I could find, thinking that would cure her. But she asked me a few days later when we were going back to church. Spiritually, something was going on. So I found a large non-denominational church, and we started to attend regularly. I loved the music, and the teachings made sense to me, so I dug out the Bible that I had been forced to purchase for one of my literature courses and started reading it. A couple of months later, I had an experience where all of my past bad decisions flashed before my eyes, and I was overcome with a deep sense of comfort and peace and a very real knowledge that I was forgiven. That was the day I made a decision to place my faith in Jesus. I enjoyed spending time with the people I had met at church, which I could grow with spiritually and share everything I was learning and the changes occurring in my life. I became active in ministry and helped to begin a campus group at U of H. It was during this time that I met James.
So, growing up, the only marital and parental role models I had were a resentful and fearful divorced mother who raised me and an absent, angry father. Church attendance was inconsistent and stopped around the time I was 10. My teenage years and early 20s were dedicated to girls, drinking, and drugs. By the time I was in my mid-20s, I was leaving a very unhealthy relationship with Gabe and Sarah's mother and contemplating entering what would turn out to be a very long and difficult custody battle. For the first time in my life, it had become abundantly clear to me that I had no idea what I was doing in relationships and in life in general. Returning to college, the destructive past I had lived and the custody battle I was beginning exhausted and broke me. It was just prior to entering that court battle that I first remembered the spiritual teachings of my childhood and prayed, asking for God's provision for my children and direction for me. I remember sincerely praying for God's will in the custody matter and saying, God, if you will just do whatever is best for my children. I'll grow up and be the man you'd have me be. This is when I first gave my life to Christ by asking him to live in my heart. And my faith and my journey with him began. 2 years later, I met Carrie and that spiritual father that was willing to personally invest in me.
The first time James and I met was in January 2003 at the University of Houston Child Care Center. There was a brief exchange between us as James interrupted and inquired about a conversation I was having with a friend regarding faith. In the months that followed, we began running into each other on campus and slowly began to get to know each other. As my friendship with James grew, I began to admire his character. He was raising his children as a single father, sought a relationship with God, was honest, and spoke to everyone like they were the one person he had been waiting to talk to all day. The thought occurred to me that he would be a good husband for someone someday, but I never thought about that someone being me. Over time, something changed, and I realized I was becoming attracted to James.
I admired Carrie for her wisdom, maturity, and pursuit of Christ. During this time in our relationship, I was able to focus on the quality person that Carrie was without viewing her in a romantic light. I had just come out of a long period in which I had ended all relationships with women, and throughout this period, my growing faith in Christ was beginning to help me manage previous struggles I'd had with lust. In fact, I was so focused on our friendship, I actually introduced Carrie to a friend of mine who had expressed an intention in looking for a wife. I thought, hey, she's the type of woman I'd be lucky to marry someday, and they're both Christians, so maybe that would work out, and thank God it didn't. So in time, I would begin to grow in my attraction to Carrie beyond the character, and beyond her character, and shared my feelings with her in January of 2005.
The prospect of beginning a romantic relationship was terrifying for both of us because we weren't looking for something casual and neither of us had any direct exposure to a successful marriage. We didn't want to mess up our friendship and we were aware of the harsh reality that we had 3 kids between us and a large amount of student loan debt without established careers. These concerns forced us to make some clear decisions about how we would proceed. We decided to enter into a traditional courtship directed by our faith. A period where we would date each other and learn more about each other with the purpose of determining whether or not we would get married. So we started our courtship with the goal of pleasing and honoring God.
Sorry. During this period, we spent a lot of time developing and sharing a vision of the marriage we wanted for ourselves and our children. We wanted an intimate marriage based on faith in which we would both individually pursuing Christ. We wanted a warm home with our family and friends, where our family and friends felt comfortable and safe. We wanted a marriage that would last, where divorce would not be an option. However, early on throughout our friendship and as our relationships grew, we faced many struggles, including our respective families. My mother relentlessly attacked the foundation of our friendship. One night as I stood before her, once again facing her inquisition regarding what Carrie and I had in common, my reasoning failed me and out of nowhere I heard myself say Christ. Weeks prior, I had asked the man who had been investing in me, based on his experience, what qualities would he recommend looking for in a wife? He very quickly and honestly answered 2 things. Is she a follower of Christ, and would she let a godly man lead her home? This is the moment I knew I would ask Carrie to marry me.
The attacks continued up to the day before James and I got married, as my mother called James and went on an hour-long tirade about what a horrible person he was and how he was going to ruin my life. That night, James delivered an ultimatum. I was either going to support him and stand up to my mother, or we weren't getting married. It wasn't easy to hear, but he was right. I knew that my mom was wrong, and for his sake and mine, I had to find it in me to take a stand for him and for our marriage. Addressing my mom was incredibly difficult at first, and though a slow process, she grew to understand that I would not tolerate her attacks or negativity towards my husband and our marriage, and she has consequently developed respect for James and his role in our marriage.
These parental conflicts concerning our marriage cause us to confront and experience the biblical concept of leave and cleave, as stated in Mark 10:8, and the two will become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. We believe this to mean the husband and the wife mentally and emotionally leave their families of origin and cleave to each other to prioritize the creation of a new bond and family.
Prior to James and I dating, I had dedicated myself to abstinence, and he and I had previously discussed this and agreed upon it. Somewhere along the way, James's feelings and thoughts concerning our barriers of physical intimacy changed, and abstinence became a huge conflict for us.
I'm not sure when my attitude changed, but my focus shifted more on my needs and my desires instead of Carrie's needs and what Christ would have for me to do.
James attacked my reasoning, said I was legalistic and rigid, and that he feared I would never be physically affectionate or passionate. I was already planning on marrying him and just wanted to enjoy our courtship and engagement, so my willpower and resolve didn't last. Not long after our wedding, the reality of our decision sank in, and I was crushed. I realized that I had broken my promise to God. I felt convicted, sad, and guilty, and upon sharing this with James, his initial response was to dismiss my feelings, saying we were forgiven and married now, so everything was fine. I was left with a sense that I had not been important enough for James to wait for. I felt hurt and betrayed, and eventually grew to anger towards James. I had no interest in being physically intimate with him, and his advances only caused me to further physically withdraw, and our sex life had become a constant source of conflict that only grew over the coming years.
I remained in selfish denial about the depths in which my choices and actions had hurt Carrie, and every time she refused my advances, I felt rejected and responded with anger towards her.
James's anger only hurt me more because it made him and his emotions the center of attention and the priority ahead of me and our marriage. I felt I couldn't trust him with my feelings and that I wasn't important to him, and I withdrew further physically and now emotionally. I had given up on my vision of the marriage and sex life that I thought I would have, thinking, maybe when James dies, I'll have better luck with my next husband.
We seem to be stuck in a downward spiral right out of the gate. With a damaged marriage and broken trust, our communication totally broke down. We tried many things for help. We prayed, we cried, we fought, we consulted more experienced Christian couples. We went to marriage counseling, and it didn't seem like anything was helping. We were lost, hurt, angry, and apart. I prayed for guidance and clarity and help to heal our marriage. Eventually, I began to understand that I was supposed to be the leader of my family, my marriage, and my wife, and that the day we'd gotten married, I'd made a promise to my wife, but even before that, I was actually making a promise to God to take care of this woman, my wife. And I was failing miserably. I realized I was to love her as Christ loved the church, and I knew Christ's greatest act for us was sacrificing himself for our sake. And therefore, in our marital conflict, only two things became important to me. Carrie was my wife, and Carrie was hurting. It became clear and important to me that I wasn't entitled to argue with her about her feelings, and certainly not dismiss them or tell her how she should feel. It wasn't until I quit responding with anger that Carrie could begin to feel secure with expressing her feelings to me, regardless of what they were. I'd never addressed or acknowledged the initial loss of her commitment to Christ, and deep down she was still grieving. I began to desire healing from my wife more than my sexual needs, and began asking her less and less for sex. We began praying together for his hand in healing her and our relationship.
When James stopped feeling rejected and responding in anger, it created space for me to heal, and I finally felt like I could trust James with my feelings. In time, this newfound sense of security and improved communication increased my desire to be physically intimate with him. Our relationship improved dramatically, but forgiving James was a long, lingering process, and it was a long time before I reached a place of peace.
This was a turning point in our marriage, and we moved forward with prayerful consideration about making some big changes that were counter to cultural and family expectations.
I decided to leave the nursing program at the University of Texas to become a full-time mother and wife as we finally began to prioritize providing the type of home and family life we had planned and desired early on. To our family and most of our friends, it seemed ridiculous leaving nursing school after all the hard work I had put into it, especially when it took James's salary and my student loans to make ends meet. However, no one else could really see the detrimental impact our schedule was having on our family and marriage. So we made the decision to walk away in faith that God would ultimately provide for us.
I left an academic advising position at the University of Houston and began to pursue a new career that would better provide for our young, large family. As I began to invest more and more time at work, Carrie was able to become involved with the kids' school and activities and take on small part-time teaching jobs. Around this time, we began to discuss and contemplate our desire for a new addition to our family.
The children that we brought into our marriage, no matter how loved, were not conceived under ideal circumstances. When James and I decided to have a baby after 4 years of marriage, everything was different. As a couple, we were able to spend time planning and preparing for all aspects of a new baby. James's unwavering support during this time helped to further build trust in our relationship.
Oh. I loved being with her through pregnancy, labor, and birth, and most of all, meeting our son, Jake, for the first time and seeing him lay in his mother's arms and begin nursing.
Although we now had a clear, unified vision and goal for our family of six, we had added more responsibility to an already full schedule, and we were once again drifting.
We become task-focused, and work-life balance began to slip away as I continued to work long hours, and Carrie and I began to physically grow apart, as more time with Jake in our bed meant less time for us. It was during a family vacation week when we heard some teaching and marital counseling concerning the negative effects of pornography on marriage that I became convicted that I needed to have a serious conversation with Carrie.
Our intimacy had been dwindling, and I could clearly feel the distance growing. During that vacation, James kept telling me that we needed to talk, but between shuttling kids from one place to another and trying to spend family time together, we just kept missing each other until he literally stopped me in the middle of the road and demanded my attention.
Within our marriage, I knew for us to regain the true intimacy we had desired and fought so hard for, I would have to once again take ownership of my damaging actions. This time it would mean addressing the fact that I'd been hiding a habit of turning towards pornography in response to stress and any delays in Carrie being available to respond to my physical needs. Prior to confronting the issue with her this time, however, I was equipped with the truths previously learned, that I was responsible for this marriage and Carrie, that I had no right to dictate her feelings or manipulate her responses, and that I was committed to stay engaged and respect my wife's responses, whatever they may be, or however long it took her to work through and express them.
When James told me that he had been hiding his viewing of pornography, I was immediately angry because he had made me feel that our growing distance was my fault. Later, James told me that he realized his actions were affecting his ability to intimately connect with me, and that the deception created an additional barrier in our transparent communication. He then told me that he was sorry, that he loved me, and that he was open and available to listen to me whenever and however I needed to respond. As I listened to James talk, I realized it wasn't the pornography that made me so angry. It was that James had hidden something from me that affected us both. I had always believed that the one thing we did have was honesty. I was so hurt and so angry, but as he was speaking in that moment, it suddenly became abundantly clear to me that I was going to forgive him.
As Carrie cried, I saw clearly how badly I had hurt her. When I finished speaking, I just sat there staring at her, only focused on her pain and internally praying for her suffering that I had caused. And Carrie reached over and took both of my hands and looked up at me directly in the eyes and said, "I forgive you." I didn't understand why or how, but I watched my wife go from being in deep emotional pain to a graceful peace in a matter of seconds. I've never seen or heard anything like that before.
The act of forgiving James's time was so different. I wasn't waiting for a feeling, but instead willfully and obediently submitting to the command to forgive one another as God has forgiven us, given in Colossians 3:13. By any worldly standards, I was justified in my pain and anger, but releasing my right to be hurt and angry freed me of the burden and weight of that pain and hurt. I immediately felt the barriers between me and James disappear. In that experience, I learned that the peace of true forgiveness is a gift that God provides as a result of following his commandment.
The rapid healing that occurred was unlike any reconciliation I've ever experienced. We instantly had a deep closeness and connection without any lingering blame or guilt. I felt completely forgiven and unjudged, and this created a safe and deep bond between us. It was like there were walls of protection placed specifically around our intimacy, and we began to intentionally foster that by having regular date nights and weekends away from the kids. This created a separate place for me and Carrie to be together outside of the context of our parental responsibilities. This would become a gift in the coming years, and it would help save our marriage.
Soon after this experience, this renewed closeness and strength in our relationship would prove to be a crucial benefit as we faced our next crisis.
You can't do this. You're going to have to hold it together. Because I got to hold it
together. Okay, I'm good. Just 2 months later, our son Jake had his first seizure at 3 years old.
Yeah, if she breaks, I'm lost, so, all right. It was a pretty and peaceful Sunday afternoon. Sorry. And as Carrie clipped coupons, Jake and I were in the living room watching Finding Nemo. No, I got it. Thank you. Jake was spinning in circles and appeared to get dizzy and fell back into the base of the couch. As his back hit with a thud, I called his name. I was going to tell him to be careful. His head began to turn towards me, but then he seemed stuck. It wasn't moving right. He wasn't moving right, and was making a strange clicking noise. Within seconds, he stopped moving and began to turn blue. I jumped up, called Carrie into the living room, and yelled for the other kids to go upstairs. Carrie took one look at him, scooped him into her arms, and immediately cried out, "God, please save my baby." In that moment, I understood in the most powerful way how much I'm not in control. I felt emotionally separated for a second. My mind instantly went to prayer to God for healing. It was like in third person, was healing for this child and having mercy on this mother and his siblings. The clarity of God's sovereignty in the moment was so clear that I felt a calm acceptance of the reality that he was the only one who could choose what would happen next. I think the separation and acceptance allowed me to just execute on what needed to be done to get help for Jake. It felt like 20 minutes before the ambulance got to our home to pick Carrie and Jake up from where she stood with him in her arms on the curb. I later realized through the phone records that it only took 7 minutes for the ambulance to get to our house from the fire station 3 blocks away and drive off with Carrie and Jake. I took the car and met them at the emergency room.
At the time, I didn't know what was happening. I believed that I was watching my son die as I carried him into the back of the ambulance. Jake regained consciousness and started breathing normally again on the way to the hospital, and the scariest moment of my life ended as I was left trying to figure out what had happened.
I arrived at the ambulance dock in the emergency center just as they had arrived. Jake was awake and sitting up in the stretcher and crying for me. I walked in and was so relieved that he was still with us.
I was a mess, focused only on Jake. James handled all the hands-on details, like calling our family members from the hospital and many other things that I don't even remember from that day. After several hours in the ER and an overnight at the hospital, we learned that Jake may have epilepsy. His next seizure 2 weeks later confirmed the diagnosis. Jake was put on a daily seizure prevention drug and responded very well to the medication. He's only had 3 more seizures in the last 6 years. dealing with the trauma of that first seizure and adjusting to our new normal of life with epilepsy was incredibly difficult for me because of the constant fear. But I was able to lean on James during this time, and he helped me to process my fear and sadness with endless patience. Our partnership was a source of great comfort during this very scary time.
Through each of these trials, we learn more and more about each other, ourselves, and most importantly, how faithful God is. The things we had gone through to this point had been difficult and painful, but as we relied on God and worked through them, we were left stronger and closer to each other as God continued to restore our marriage. And we needed every bit of that strength to face what came next. Over the last few years, we've been dealing with some extreme behavioral issues with our older son, Gabe. And although we haven't yet received the resolution we've hoped for, we have been blessed in many ways individually and as a couple and as a family.
I noticed some troubling behaviors from our son, Gabe, from very early on. Things that I was able to look back at and see that they were red flags. I felt like I was the only one seeing them, or at least remembering from one situation to the next. As Gabe got older, his behavior toward me was increasingly disobedient and hostile, but he would do really well around other adults. People would regularly come up to me and tell me how polite or responsible or helpful he had been. It was very frustrating, but I thought maybe he just hates me and he'll go out in the world and be successful. So I continued to support his outside activities and felt the need to protect his reputation by not sharing my suffering with friends and family. This was the beginning of the growing isolation I would experience over the coming years. I felt alone because it seemed like I was the only one that saw and experienced the deceitful and hurtful things my son was doing and saying. I felt guilty because I thought, as a mother, I should have raised Gabe to know better than he was doing. I felt not only that it must be my fault that Gabe was misbehaving and treating me so badly, but that it was my job to fix it before it impacted his future success in life and in his personal relationships.
I was and have been truly blind to our son's behavior for years. I assumed that since I taught him the difference between right and wrong and tried to impart Christian principles from a very young age, that Gabe was living in a positive way when not under my supervision. In the eyes of the world, we'd done many things right as parents. He had played sports throughout his childhood, and he had been in scouts from Tiger all the way to just shy of Eagle. I was involved all the way through scouts and coached or assisted the coaches of many of his team sports. I believed I knew my son for who he was, but the truth is I saw him through my own paradigm and not who he was revealing himself to be. And this was an ever-increasing stress between Carrie and me. Carrie would consistently describe his behavior in the circumstances where he was disrespectful, lying, and stealing, and I couldn't possibly believe her descriptions. I believe I was in denial to some degree. I had worked so hard from the day my children were born to provide for them and raise them to be healthy adults, and I couldn't see or possibly accept the truth about the way things were. As the circumstances in the home grew worse, every day became a fight. We developed a cycle where I would come home exhausted and impatient from being overworked, and I consistently walked into a hostile environment.
James was working ridiculous hours, and I absolutely enabled that because as hard as dealing with Gabe was, it seemed easier without James. When James would come home from work and find out about whatever Gabe was in trouble for that day, he would either fall for Gabe's story and blame me, or he would get really angry and yell at Gabe, which didn't help me either because then he would feel guilty and have long, intense conversations with him. Gabe was getting all of the attention all of the time. If Gabe wasn't actively in trouble for something, then James was over-investing time and energy to help or support Gabe. Maybe I should have grabbed James by the shoulder, shaken him, and said, "Hey, this is all falling apart," but I didn't. I suffered in silence for as long as I could, just hoping it would get better when Gabe left for college or something. But over time, Gabe's behavior got worse and worse. I felt like a prisoner in my own home. I couldn't take Gabe with me places because I couldn't predict how he would act or what trouble he would cause in public, but I didn't feel comfortable leaving him home alone because he would get into trouble at home. I couldn't nap or shower while the kids were awake. I felt like I was in constant surveillance mode. I didn't even feel comfortable leaving the kids home with James. He didn't realize how bad our son's behavior had gotten, and I didn't trust him to be as vigilant as I was. Gabe would turn this behavior on and off. He would be absolutely horrible to me, and that when James got home, act completely different. It got so bad that the girls, Alicia and Sarah, were telling me that I needed to install video cameras in our home. This was one of the signs that things were getting way out of hand. My children shouldn't need video cameras to defend their reality. It was about this time that I took notice of my own drinking. One day I looked at the kitchen clock while preparing dinner and I thought, oh, it's a good time for a glass of wine. And then I realized that this is the thought I would have every afternoon when it was time for my son to come home from school. And many nights I would easily finish a bottle of wine by myself. This was another wake-up call. I realized that I was responding to my anxiety about how Gabe might behave with drinking and that it had become a coping mechanism. The anxiety would start as soon as I saw Gabe walking up the driveway after school, and I couldn't relax until all of the kids were asleep. Thankfully, I decided to stop drinking in response to stress or anxiety and didn't end up with any lasting issues related to alcohol, but my anxiety would only continue to grow.
Carrie's persistence in trying to tell me about Gabe's behavior continued to increase. I began to become very annoyed and angry because I didn't see it. I began to fight with Carrie late at night and accuse her, saying, "You must be doing something that's contributing to his behavior." Gabe's room was down the hall, and I'm sure he sat in there listening to our yelling and anger while being aware of his contribution and not ever speaking up. I blamed Carrie and defended Gabe repeatedly, and this was increasing distance between Carrie and me in our daily lives. I began to contemplate divorce and even yelled at her during an especially bad fight we had in front of Jake in the car. I felt stuck, and I didn't know what to do since I was still oblivious and in denial.
By this time, Gabe was failing several classes, sneaking out of the house when he was supposed to be asleep, sneaking into the house when he was supposed to be gone, constantly sneaking and stealing from everyone in the house, and interacting with girls his age in a manner that was disturbing. I had gotten to the point where I wouldn't even tell James most of the things Gabe would say and do to me because his reactions weren't helpful and often caused more problems. I had come to accept that Gabe was not going to respect me, and I thought I could tolerate that. But my concerns about how Gabe's behavior was affecting the other kids were growing rapidly. I was particularly concerned about Sarah. Looking back, I can see that a big turning point for us came when I walked Sarah into a therapist's office and asked for help because I felt like my daughter was learning to be in abusive relationships from her relationship with her brother. This is when I got very serious about monitoring Gabe's behavior, and I finally found a way to make James see what was going on. I had access to monitor Gabe's online communications. I was able to show James several instances of lying and manipulative behavior as it was happening, and Gabe couldn't hide or deny it anymore.
It wasn't until Carrie approached me with the evidence of Gabe's behavior that I began to doubt the persona Gabe was showing me. I began to confront Gabe more and more, and my anger grew as I began to feel constantly challenged for authority in my home. At a professional suggestion, we tried to implement a behavioral level system in our home where the children would have to earn some of the extras based on their behavior and assigned responsibilities. But this system became overwhelming to manage with Gabe, as enforcing the boundaries and rules became a 24-hour job. We spent a lot of money taking Gabe to therapy and recommended psychological testing, all to no avail. We were embarrassed and avoided most of our larger community, except for the few couples that we had met who were continually investing in our family. I would warn Gabe over and over during the coming months that he had to stop and that I couldn't tolerate his behavior in the home, that he had younger siblings who were watching, and the environment was increasingly unhealthy for everyone. At this point, it was difficult to fully comprehend how mixed up and damaged our family had become. The decay of the family relationships and the home environment had occurred slowly over time, like the story of a boiling frog. At the time, I didn't notice the physical toll it was taking on my family either.
I wasn't taking care of myself as I became more and more afraid to leave Gabe unsupervised with his siblings. The stress was affecting me medically as my immune system began to fail, and I was sick all the time. Jake's immune system was also compromised, and the health of both of us declined even further when we had a duct issue with our air conditioning that led to an explosion of mold all across our home. We were so overwhelmed that we had let this go until mold was in nearly every room of the house. The home was falling in disrepair along with our health. James and I were considerably overweight and stressed eating or drinking almost every night.
Our oldest daughter, Alicia, effectively hid in the study for most days, only to come out to help Carrie with cleaning or cooking. Alicia grew to feel it was her responsibility to protect Jake from the fighting and yelling, and if she didn't go get him When the fighting started, Jake would retreat and hide to an oversized box he had in his room. The situation had become so dysfunctional that just prior to going off to college, Alicia set me down and told me in tears that she wasn't sure she could leave. She believed she had to stay to help in the home and protect her siblings. I urged her to go build her own life, in part because I knew that it was best for her, and in part because I couldn't imagine that all the hard work and sacrifices we made for our children's future were in vain. Alicia agreed, but made it clear to me that I needed to get it together in the home, or she didn't know if she'd be able to stay away in school. By this point, Gabe had given up in school and began to have behaviors on campus that, without intervention, could have led to significant lasting negative consequences. And it was beginning to become clear that he was at risk of not completing high school. There was no relief, and as the situation worsened, Carrie and I began to discuss other options for dealing with the circumstances in the home.
I no longer felt safe with Gabe in the home, and I felt completely powerless over any decisions regarding Gabe. By this time, I had long since adopted Gabe and Sarah and was their mother legally as well as in practicality. But when it came to Gabe, I always felt like I was just an ineffective step-parent. Gabe's complete disrespect for me, as well as James's periodic questioning and doubt of my parenting of Gabe specifically, made me feel like an outsider. I felt trapped in this awful environment between Gabe's behavior, James's reactions, and the constant need to protect the other children. When James was still blaming me for the situation with Gabe and threatening divorce, I realized that it may actually happen and started to try and figure out how I was going to support myself and what I would have to do legally to make sure the other children were protected if we were going to begin a shared custody situation. These are things I never planned on having to think about, but thankfully, James had eventually woken up to what was really going on with Gabe and stopped talking about divorce. As James came to realize how very broken our family was, we looked everywhere for solutions. We even discussed James and Gabe getting an apartment across town so I could feel safe at home with the kids. That idea was hard to stomach because it seemed like yet another instance of Gabe getting all of James's attention for all the wrong reasons.
It all came to a head one school night when Gabe exploded in anger towards Sarah and basically went after her. I got a hold of Gabe and was in the backyard with him. I held him with my hands on either side of his face and was screaming at him. In that moment, it took every bit of self-control not to hit him. In the middle of my tirade, I heard myself say, "I'm not equipped to deal with you." And it struck me in that exact moment that this really was the issue. Gabe had reached a point where I saw that he had not been, nor could I manage him in the home any longer. With this realization came an extreme sadness that only would grow over the next year and a half. I had to accept that the situation had grown out of my control and that my son had to be removed from the home. I could no longer deny the circumstances, and Carrie and I discussed it and quickly reconnected with the man who ran the troubled boys home. We dropped Gabe off there just after New Year's in 2018.
The first weeks after Gabe left were very raw in our home. James was heartbroken, and we were all uneasy as things had shifted so rapidly and dramatically in our home environment. James had made the decision to remove Gabe from the home to protect the rest of us, and in the hopes that such drastic measures might get Gabe's attention and prompt real growth and change for him. But it really tore James apart. I felt so bad for James because he was suffering so much, but I also felt relieved because we were finally in the same reality. I was no longer alone, no longer the only one in my marriage seeing what was going on, and no longer having to doubt and question my own experience. Looking back, I can see that God took care of me during this period of loneliness and isolation by providing me with a true friend. She had a son the same age as Jake, and over the years, our families had become close. This friend was such a gift during this dark time in my life because I could tell her all the things. I didn't have to worry about protecting my son's image, and she always believed me and never judged me. I can't even begin to imagine the final toll this period would have taken on my mental health if I hadn't had this friend to be my safe place for all those years.
It was very difficult for me to accept the reality that I had to break up my family by moving my son out. I felt like a failure as a leader in my home, as a husband to my wife, and a father to my son, and had guilt about Gabe not being there as a son and a brother to his siblings. This emotional struggle grew to depression, and I reached a point where I would get to work and simply go into my office and cry. I obsessed about the circumstance and limped along at work until I could no longer perform. This was a particularly bad time for us to fall apart, or for me to fall apart. It's just 2 months prior in October, I'd left my well-established role at a large corporation to start a company. I lasted for 8 months at work before my partner set me down in our conference room and informed me that I needed to resign. I felt like an out-of-body experience as I sat there at the table and listened to him. Oddly enough, I felt no fear. Instead, I had two thoughts running through my mind. First, I couldn't help but see the humor and the irony that I'd been a top performer and never been fired from a job in my career, and now my first firing was from my own company. Second, and more importantly, I had the thought, yeah, this sucks, but I've got real problems at home.
I believe God used this pain over the family and the loss of this job to wake James up to the fact that he had not been truly prioritizing family. Losing this job normally would have seemed catastrophic at this time. Gabe's living circumstances weren't stable as he was kicked out of the first boys' home and had completed a short-term residency in another. We ended up finding a therapeutic environment that we felt had the best chance of success, but it would cost thousands of dollars each month, forcing us to take out a loan from our retirement. These costs were on top of the individual couples and family therapy costs the rest of us were incurring as we worked to heal the damage that each of us were dealing with. But losing that job turned out to be a tremendous blessing, as we ended up receiving 1 year of James's full salary and severance pay, and his schedule was clear to prioritize family healing. During that time, we were able to make weekly 6-hour round-trip drives for therapy sessions with Gabe. During those sessions, Gabe seemed to avoid the hard therapeutic work of exploring how his behavior had gotten him to where it had, or taking accountability for his actions. But we believe that good still came from them because it was an opportunity for us to continue to show up and to demonstrate how committed we were to Gabe and to his future. Those drives also gave James and me uninterrupted time to process all that we were going through together. That time in the car turned out to be a big part of our healing process.
I was just starting the real difficult grieving process required for healing. For many months, I would continue to cry out to God and relied heavily on the men who continued to invest in me. I had countless sleepless nights filled with pain. And it was in one of these moments that I believe I received my first instruction on what to do next. I've never been someone that would say God told me or I heard God speak. However, it was about 3 a.m. on one of these nights that I had a particular experience. I sat weeping and praying and asking God for deliverance of the circumstance. I was exhausted and overwhelmed with guilt and grief, trying to understand where and how much my negative influence created this circumstance. I was finally out of words and thoughts. I sat silently resting and imagining God as a benevolent father who knew exactly what was happening and had it under his control. As I sat there in tears, I had two thoughts or messages pop into my mind. What is odd is I felt no connection to conjuring them up from the depths of my mind, like usual experience with other thoughts. And what was even more odd is the messages were from a third-person perspective. It was as if I was hearing a message without receiving it auditorily. The messages I experienced were, you are accountable, and let me have him now. For years, I've walked by this plaque in our home that sits near the back door. It's a white plaque with a very simple note in black lettering saying, "Trust me," signed God. I'd finally arrived at the end of myself in circumstances where I no longer had any other choice. However, God is faithful, and trusting and resting in his command to give him my son has resulted in peace and rest that I hadn't and couldn't experience before.
There have been a lot of changes in our lives over the last 2 years. Our marriage has been completely restored, and James and I are now closer and stronger than we have ever been. Shockingly and miraculously, even through the worst of the times over the last 5 years, we still had getaways from time to time, and it helped as they seem to be the only place and time where we were able to feel connected. I believe these getaways helped us to keep our hearts open for God to heal our marriage. What we have now is better than either of us ever imagined possible. Each of us in the home has received some emotional and psychological healing to varying degrees. James has made great improvements on working through his grief and depression, and I no longer feel alone in my experience, and I'm building trust that James will stay present, aware, and engaged in the home. I'm now able to take care of myself with little things like taking showers and going to yoga classes. And James and my health have both greatly improved. Alicia is building her own life and launching very well. She is completing her junior year in college and is on track to meet her natural calling as an early education teacher. Sarah is regaining confidence as she continues to overcome struggles in school and grows in independence through working as a lifeguard and swim instructor. We have watched her grow into a great big sister to Jake, and we regularly enjoy their loving interactions. Jake's immune system has improved, and he has been stable with his epilepsy and has displayed increased healthy independence and a significant interest in a relationship with James that was not present in the past. After 6 months of peace in the home, Jake, at 8 years old, wrote James a note for the very first time. It was on a scrap of paper that said, "I love you, Dad. Even the family dog is calmer and more relaxed."
Our relationships with extended family have been clarified by newly formed healthy boundaries. Carrie's parents have shown support throughout these years, and we have grown in a deeper relationship and community with them. My parents have begun to adjust to the new boundaries, and their judgmental attacks are continuing to subside. We're learning to love them where they are and see them in a healthier, detached perspective that is diminishing our perceived need to change them. We've also gained a great relationship with my brother. He and I haven't always been close, but through this, he has provided many hours of non-judgmental support. We have also been able to support him and love him through the struggles he faces in his family. A couple of years ago, I began to have a deep calling for financial order and for us to be completely debt-free, and God accomplished this in a supernatural way. In the middle of this storm and following my layoff, the phone started ringing with unsolicited consulting opportunities. We subsequently started a consulting business that provided freedom with my schedule where we could still prioritize family, and Carrie and I were even able to work together. Through this, God blessed us with enough additional income that allowed us to repay the loan from our retirement and pay off all of our debts, and even provided an abundance to allow us to help my brother with some financial assistance. Our home has completely changed. We finally addressed the mold and disrepair, and even built decks in the backyard where we now have meals together and feel comfortable inviting family and friends. However, the environment within the home seems to be the biggest change of all. Instead of a source of anxiety and fear, our home has become a place of peace and rest. It took months for us to adjust to this change. We would have really nice experiences, a meal together or working together on a project around the house, and it was hard to believe they were real. We called them TV moments for a while because it seemed like the kind of family we thought only existed on television. We no longer feel like prisoners in our home and have begun to open our home to visitors and form new and deepen old relationships. We're also finally blessed with kids from the neighborhood that regularly show up on our doorstep to play.
In October of last year, Gabe completed the therapeutic program, earned his high school diploma, and turned 18. He's currently living in Austin with James's father and has a job and is taking classes at a community college. Although we are thankful for these advancements with Gabe, there are still things left unsettled. Despite the many hours of therapy we had with Gabe, we did not make much progress in healing our relationship with him, and he did not show an interest in reconnecting with his siblings and remains distant from all of us. Last month, Gabe informed us all that he would not be engaging with the family much beyond phone calls for birthdays and holidays, and other than the few touch points James has had through reaching out to him, he's held true to that. However, we are growing in our understanding that he's an adult, and God will work in his life in his own divine timing, just as he has for us. There are also areas where there's opportunity for personal healing to continue. The years of feeling trapped and powerless had a significant impact on me. I was diagnosed with complex PTSD, and while I am doing so much better, I continue to struggle with fear and anxiety around the potential damage that Gabe could cause for himself and within our family. Alicia still feels protective of her younger siblings and doesn't want them around Gabe when she's not there. Sarah still struggles with lingering damage, but continues to work hard individually and collectively with us to overcome the damaged thought patterns. She also worries that since they have some mutual friends and acquaintances, that he will show up unexpectedly at her school. Additionally, James, Jake, and Sarah all have moments of mourning, missing Gabe and wishing he would behave differently as a big brother and son. We and many others have been praying for healing and restoration in our family. According to Romans 8:28, we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. The evidence of this is so abundant in our story that we have hope that God will continue to work in our family.
During a recent breakfast with my spiritual father made a statement that stuck with me. He said, "Only God can make a significant change in people. And it's usually through a significant event. It is our experience that this is true, and it is our hope that God remains the author of the remainder of this story. It is our prayer that this testimony acts as evidence for you, your marriages, and your family of the truth of God's love and provision throughout our lives. Thank you for letting us share our story with you."